Hello, I'm Stephanie Belcher.
And I'm Del Belcher, and this is
Two Peas in a Podcast,
a relationship show from two people who like each other very,
very
much.
Very
much.
Very
much.
Do, 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 do. Wait, no, that's the wrong thing.
That's Mad Men.
Ooh.
Play the intro music.
Oh my goodness.
What?
I'm trying to get Game of Thrones music in my head and
you're
nothing is coming
Mad
out.
You're doing the Mad Men song.
It's the same. Doesn't
Mad
it start on the,
Men,
isn't that the same key?
No. Ba, da, 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 da. That's Harry Potter. It's dun 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 dun. We've recently done a Game of Thrones intro, Stephanie. Are we allowed to do another this soon, even though we're recording on the eve of the final episode of Game of Thrones?
I feel like we just need a moment of silence for, first off, that most recent episode. No spoilers, but anyway. But then also, I can forgive the last season knowing that the seasons before that have meant so much to our lives.
The fact that everyone's so mad about it means that it's done a good job.
Yeah.
And I had a great thought.
Yes.
That I just forgot.
Oh, you were telling me. Oh, Del, tell everyone how you thought the season was going to end.
Oh, here's how. Oh, you said no spoilers. Anyone who hasn't watched it by now is.
Well, I don't think this isn't going to spoil anything.
Anyone who hasn't watched it by now is.
This isn't going to spoil anything.
Listen, anyone who hasn't watched it by now is never going to watch it. So we're not spoiling anything. And if you're this far behind, that's your own fault. It's been on for like 20 years.
Don't do anything in this last season. But what you told me.
I think Bran. Can I say his name? Bran.
Bran.
Bran. Bran. Yeah. Brandon Stark. The Three-Eyed Raven. The worst. He sucks. he's the worst. Anyway, I think what's gonna happen is he's gonna wake up and be like, oh, what? They're gonna have one of those shots where he's like from a nightmare or a dream, but it'll be like he'll look different and like younger, and everyone will be like, oh, Bron, you just fell out the window and you bonked your head, but he's not paralyzed and everyone's still alive and nothing happened and it was all a dream. That's what's gonna happen. I'm calling it right now. I will be very wrong, because by the time this comes out, the show will have ended and everyone will know that the whole nine seasons,
you know,
20 years of Game of Thrones is just all in his head. All a dream.
I think it's unlikely that that's what happened. However, I'm just going to say that we recorded this Saturday, May 18th at 7:16 p.m. So if it does happen, we can play it to the world and say that Del Belcher caught it.
Would you really put it past him?
So,
speaking of things that are disappointing, Stephanie.
Well, we also had a good weekend.
We did have a good weekend.
We bought
mulch
and a deck.
We have a deck. We are middle class white people with a deck, and it's so great.
Yep.
I love it.
So these are the things we get. We bought patio furniture.
We got an umbrella.
It's very exciting.
And here's the thing. We've been saving. We've been working. We've been earning those big podcast dollars.
That's right.
And I think you put them to good use. And listen to this. We got all of our patio furniture at the hottest designer in town. I don't know if you've heard of him, Mr. Aldi. Aldi has patio furniture.
Yeah, who knew?
And I went in there to get my very cheap barbecue sauce. It's
thanks,
not sweet
Mr.
Baby.
Berman.
It's not sweet. Sweet. It's like... tangy baby bourbon, baby Berman's is their brand. Get that tangy baby right out here. And Stephanie's like, look at this stuff. Isn't it neat?
Wouldn't you think our
deck is complete? And two trips back and forth from Aldi. Who would have known that you could get a whole set of furniture at Aldi?
I would have never guessed. Anyway,
I feel conflicted about that, but I feel good because it looks
so good. Affordable. Looks great.
We'll have to record from our deck.
Ooh.
It's not a deck. It's like a patio, but it's like a raised patio, but not a deck.
It's cool. It's a platform.
It's a platform, a raft, a landbound raft.
So we get excited about other things besides Game of Thrones and decks. This is Two Peas in a Podcast, two parts to our show. both of them about relationships. Second part is The Split, where we take a relationship article torn from the headlines and talk about it. Last week, we talked about emotional intelligence because it's everywhere all the time, buzzword, big thing. Mm-hmm. And this is part two of that, where we talk about how to become more emotionally intelligent, because unlike intelligence quotient, you can actually become more emotionally intelligent.
What if I already am super emotionally intelligent? Like, I know. I just
well,
know.
That sentence would lead me to believe you're not self-aware.
Well, okay. I'll listen. We'll see what happens. The first part of the show, though, is Better Half, where we look at the story of a famous or historical figure's better half, spouse, partner, you know, the unsung hero of a relationship. Behind every great spouse is a different spouse who is actually doing everything. Isn't that how it goes? I tried to make it more equitable.
No,
for
honey.
Today's...
I'm just kidding.
I tried to make it that I've updated the old axiom for today's modern era. But yeah. And so if you are first listening, that's what you can expect today. And thanks for tuning in. And if you haven't, make sure you check us out on all of the podcast markets, places, the Apples, the Spotify's and whatnot. We are everywhere. Two peas in a podcast. We're the cute one with the heart and the microphone. So
like us, tell your friends.
Like us, tell your friends. Give us a review. But in the meantime, it's time for Better Half.
Let's hear it, Del.
Stephanie, I'm cashing in on a promise I made a few weeks back.
I'm excited.
A few weeks back, so hang in there.
I'm ready.
May Josephine, her name is May, not the month. May Josephine Coughlin was born in 1897 to Irish parents. She was one of seven children, and she grew up in the Carroll Gardens neighborhood of Philadelphia. Now, May was very shy, and she had very bad allergies to dust and wool, and she had an overbite.
This is very specific.
Yes, she had an overbite, and it made her extremely introverted. And she was quiet and shy. She was like painfully shy.
Poor little thing.
And so her parents were like, she's never going to get married. Like, she's talented. Oh, she's got her thing. But they were just like,
by the way, a female's highest aspiration should never be marriage.
Unless it's the early 19th century and it's either that or you're a spinstress by the age 20. So
just put them in a convent like they used to.
Yeah.
Come on, May.
So. So yeah, needless to say, the family was very surprised when she received a proposal of marriage from a local.
That's like so me. And they're like, wow, are you sure? She's got an overbite and allergies. I don't know if you're going to make it.
Are you sure?
Oh, sure. So mean.
Oh, poor May. I've seen pictures of her. She looks great. She looks fabulous. This could be partly part of it. She got a proposal from a local businessman named Albert Capone.
Oh, well, what do you know?
Lucky her. So they were.
You.
I'm cashing in Al Capone's wife. Here we go.
I'm excited.
They are not Al Capone's wife. It's Better Half. She is her own person.
Well, she was his wife.
May Coughlin Capone. They were married in December in 1918, and
oof, rough year to get married.
Yeah, the people were pretty sure they were in love, but they also had their very first baby boy like a month later, so they were happy.
Oh, well, there you go.
So they,
you know, those short gestation periods.
Some
are...
people just have babies so fast; it's incredible. They named their son Albert Francis Capone. Also, he had a bunch of nicknames, which I thought was really funny.
Sneezy, Wheezy.
Well, okay.
Dust
so
bite.
His main nickname was Sonny. Everybody called him Sonny.
That's cute.
He also had the nickname Jigsy, and he had the nickname Little Snorky.
The 1920s are great.
Little Snorky, come on over. Yeah. So Little Snorky, after Al Capone's dad died, Al May, and along with...
Wait,
after Al Capone the older, not Snorky.
After Sonny died.
No. After Al's dad died.
So there's three Al Capones.
No. Wait. Al Capone. We're going to call their son Sonny.
Sonny.
From now on, okay. He is Sonny.
Sonny.
In parentheses. From will now we be referred to as Sonny.
Sonny.
So when I say Al, that's Al Capone.
Okay.
We're buds. So he gets his first name basically.
The Al. Okay, good.
The Al. After the Al's dad died. Al, May, Sonny, and a bunch of their family, the Capone clan, a lot of them moved to Chicago. Mm. And that's kind of where we know a lot of the Capone story is his gangster ties and all that good stuff in Chicago. So when they were in Chicago, May, she was very religious growing up as an Irish Catholic. She was an ardent churchgoer, and she would bring Sonny and some of her family. They would go to church like 3 to 4 times a week. You know,
yeah.
So they were going all the time.
Don't Catholics have
service daily? Yeah, they have mass every day that you can go to if you'd like, and there's also the weekly, the weekend services, the weekend mass. But she was going every day. And Al, you know, for all of his faults, he tried to show his love by supporting May and what she liked. So he did things like bought the church a new pipe organ.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
And bought some new stained glass windows and stuff. So he knew that she enjoyed it. He knew that it meant a lot to her. And so he tried to support her that way. But not only was she religious and tried to keep that thing instilled in Sonny's life, she also took a lot of, you know, trouble, went to great lengths to make sure that her son lived an incredibly normal life at home, at school, kind of out of view of Al Capone's criminal activity.
Little did they know about that pipe organ. Bottles of whiskey in every single one.
Yeah.
Why won't the pipe organ work?
It's smuggling gangsters in from Canada.
We keep having everyone look at this pipe organ.
Yeah. Anyway, so she hoped Sonny would not fall into a life of crime. And so she knew what was going on, but she tried it. Sonny was growing up. I don't think he like knew a lot was going on. She kept it very normal, very regular. And even after Al's arrest, she said, like, don't do as your father did. You know, he broke my heart. You know, so like she loved
Al
and
her son.
They knew there was this trouble. But like at the same time, she's like, I love your father, but like, just don't do what he did. You know, that kind of thing. So what happened next? Al Capone's a criminal, right? He got arrested. And he got arrested on May 4th, 1938. He arrived at Atlanta Penitentiary to serve 8 years in the federal penitentiary system for tax evasion. Stories say that while he was there, Capone had control over many prison officials and enjoyed a lot of privileges that other inmates didn't get. That reason, a lot of people, historians have said, are why Al Capone was later sent to Alcatraz.
Yeah.
So we're getting back to May here in just a quick second. In early February of 1938, Al Capone was hospitalized for a mental collapse. The media at the time, he was super famous, super popular. Like, everybody knew who he was. The media thought he was going insane and were writing all these stories about him. Later on in February the 28th of 1938, May was able to visit him for the first time since his collapse. What's interesting about this is that, you know, I mentioned those pictures earlier. This whole event basically is documented with photography, like paparazzi.
That she got to see him?
Yeah, paparazzi-like photography. Like,
jeez.
So there's this boat that goes to and from Alcatraz from San Francisco called the Gerald M. No, was it? Yeah, the Gerald M. The General Frank something. I mess with it. Anyway.
Okay, there's a boat. It's got a name.
Going on a boat. It's like telephoto lens. There's pictures of her up close, and she's got her coat pulled up over her face. It's crazy to see the similarities between like recent paparazzi and her life. So she went to Alcatraz Island, saw Al Capone there. And that's kind of the first time that she'd seen him since the collapse. So here's where things get a little crazy. On that same day, she's leaving the Alcatraz.
Yeah.
She gets off the boat. She gets in the taxi cab. She's with her brother-in-law, Ralph Capone, which we don't hear a lot about.
Good old Ralph.
Al Capone sounds way cooler than Ralph Capone. I think if Ralph...
Al and Ralph?
Mm-hmm.
Very specific
I feel
names.
That if Ralph Capone had been the main bad guy, no one would care. Ralph Capone was accompanying her in the cab. Ralph instructed the cab driver, this guy named Ben Rather, to drive to Market and Powell Streets to evade all of the reporters at all costs.
Oh, wow.
They had him driving on sidewalks, through red lights, stop signs, going the opposite direction on streets, just to get away from the reporters who wanted to scoop on Al. Alcatraz kept any news of Al from getting out, and this was now the reporter's only chance to find out something about Al Capone. The chase went on until the cab finally almost ran out of gas and had to stop to fill up. The reporters rushed her with their flashbulbs going off. May asked frantically, "What can I do for you to make you stop chasing me?" They chased him for like almost 70 miles.
Ugh.
Everywhere. The reporter replied, "All we want to know is, how is Al?" May replied, "Al is all right." "Is he going to get well?" she was asked. "Yes, he's going to get well. He's suffering from dejection and a broken spirit, aggravated by intense nervousness," she said. Ralph interceded at that point that his brother was not insane. May hid her face, and there's pictures of that, and tried not to speak any further, choosing to let Ralph handle it. Finally, the reporters kind of went away, let them leave, and they got their way back to their hotel.
Okay.
So, it's crazy. Sidewalk car chase by reporters. But Al Capone's health did decline a lot. He was released from Alcatraz on parole in 1939 due to his health decline. He had neurosyphilis, and he was continually confused and disoriented. He was referred to Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, but they didn't want to let him in because of his reputation. But a Union Memorial in Baltimore also did accept him. So his health kept getting worse and worse. They moved to the Miami area in Florida. Sonny, May, Al, and then some of their family moved to Florida. He just tried to get some in and out patient, just comfort, I guess. And then in 1947, he died of complications after a stroke. Doctors said he had the mental capacity of a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
So his... he was 33 years old. Which what? Is... To me, that's crazy. I thought he was a lot older.
That it? Yeah.
I think he died when he was 33. Maybe that's, I think I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, because that's really...
That's worth young. That age.
Yeah.
Well, you're older.
Yeah. So she, so May continued to take Sonny to church and try to keep that family community alive within the home and with the Capones that had moved down there with them. After Al's death, May and Sonny tried to live their life. They opened an Italian restaurant.
Oh, no. His reign of crime ended when he was 33.
Okay. And
so he went into prison then. He died sometime later.
He would have been 40-ish.
47. So he died at age 48.
Okay. Still not very old.
He died 8 days after his birthday. Anyway.
Wow. That's okay. Still not very old. After Al's death, May and Sonny opened an Italian restaurant in Miami. That was kind of fun. It was first called Ted's Grotto and then just The Grotto. And it had really good reviews. I found an old menu that had kind of everything listed. Just like typical, 1950s Italian fare, Italian-American fare. It was said to be decorated in a Roman-Italian style with busts of Roman emperors, stone pillars, and the food was really good. May lived out the rest of her life in peace in the Miami area. She passed away in 1986 at the Hollywood Hills retirement
home. Wow, she lived a long time.
Yeah, in Hollywood, Florida, outside of Miami. So May was kind of a tragic character. She was incredibly loving. She was very caring. Her family meant a lot, especially considering the activities and the infidelities of Al Capone. She never betrayed her family. She never did a tell-all. She never did an interview. Even sometimes when the financial needs rose around, later in life, she never said anything. And so while Al sometimes enjoyed the limelight, he liked being famous. He liked being that guy. May didn't like it, and she tried her hardest to keep their family life private and to keep that family unit together at home. People in some of the stuff that I was reading about her say that she's just really the epitome of trust and loyalty. And so that's the story of May Capone in a nutshell, for better half. So it's sad.
It sounds like she lived a very normal, short of that period of time where she was married to him. It sounds like she just had a normal life.
Yeah.
All things considered.
And the fact that she could have not.
Yeah.
If she had wanted to, with what she knew and how popular he was, when he passed away, and even throughout the ages, like, Geraldo, we're going to open the vault of Capone. Like, there's still movies and characters and things like that recently modeled after him. And she just was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And that's like, that's kind of, that's pretty big to respect, like, your family that much. Even if your husband was, like, the super criminal. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's still something to be said about that, I guess.
I like that.
So any thoughts about May Capone, babe?
I always have a large amount of respect for people like that. And I mean, honestly, if she had sold all the rights to it, done a movie, had a book, I would have given her that. Like, yeah, totally.
No,
like,
one would have been mad about it.
No, I don't think anyone would have been mad about it. But to someone who is content to live their life doing what they think is honorable and good, I respect that.
And it is kind of cool to think about, you know, I'm not a big time criminal. I don't know if you know that or not. I'm not even like a small time criminal. And, you know, but we have work and we're very busy, but I want to try to make sure that our home is peaceful and a place where, like, our daughter and you can, we can have like a unit here together where we're just together. And I feel like no matter what else is going on, like, that's something, it's very cool. And I feel like that is an important thing to keep in mind throughout your life. So, Stephanie, I did it. Al Capone's wife, the better half, May Capone. You're welcome.
It sounds like, compared to some other people, given her quiet life, not as much out there. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you did a nice job summarizing, given what we know.
Yeah, I struck gold with that car chase story. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
There was a couple websites of people who were very specifically dedicated to, like, obsessively chronicling whatever they could of her. And so that's nice to find passionate people. That's very cool. But yeah, I said very cool.
So you know what that means.
Oh, I do.
The split, where we take a relationship article torn from the headlines and talk about it.
Okay, babe. Emotional intelligence. Enough with my jokes. I know what it is for real, and I was just being silly before.
So, I know. So this is an article that summarizes, we're going to do a quick recap of the facets of emotional intelligence and then tell you little tricks and tips for how to be emotionally intelligent.
I do want to say one thing about this, is that I've known about emotional intelligence for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing about it that sticks in my head at the moment is a season of Bachelor in Paradise, like two seasons ago, the one character, I forget her name, but she kept saying about how she was so emotionally intelligent, but she kept saying, like, emotional intelligence.
I know.
She's like, I'm just so emotional intelligent, and she's not emotional intelligent. And it was driving me crazy. And now, whenever you say it, I just think of that person.
I have had that thought too. The same one.
Yeah. Oh, look at that.
We watch too much Bachelor.
Not enough Bachelor.
So emotional intelligence has five different facets. We're going to pick one facet. I'm going to summarize what that is again and then tell you, if you're interested in getting better at it, how you can do that. So the first that we mentioned earlier, part of being emotionally intelligent, is being self-aware.
Yeah, I like that.
And being self-aware is the ability to read your own emotions and recognize their impact while using your own intuition to guide decisions.
I feel like that's a very basic sort of function of being a human, but mm-hmm. I guess that it doesn't carry over into all situations.
There's just some people you meet where they don't have self-awareness. So one hallmark of knowing whether you have any self-awareness is if you have the ability to self-deprecate. So if you're someone who can make fun of yourself, and I feel like there's probably a fine line here, not to the point of, wow, he really or she really makes fun of him or herself all the time.
There can be a level of self-deprecation that's just like, you're either like fishing for compliments or you just have a really incredibly low view of yourself.
Yeah.
But that's different than being able to joke about yourself. Yeah. Which I think I'm okay at.
I think I'm okay at it too. I feel like the fact that we're pausing to think about it is probably a sign.
Well, the fact that I was thinking about how Sisqó's The Thong Song is the greatest song of my generation. Yeah. Like, I'm very okay, and I understand that that's the most ridiculous statement I've ever said on this show. However, I still believe it. Tweet me, come at me. And I feel that this is a way of self-deprecating that's actually self-aware, because I know it's ridiculous.
If you feel like this is an area where you want to get better, one thing that you could do is get more feedback from your friends. Mm-hmm. You could ask them, am I self-aware or is there something I can improve? And the article that I am summarizing mentioned that when you do that and your friends give you tips, it does help you start thinking about yourself and your mm-hmm. own behavior. And then that's one way to start improving that.
Now, you say friends. Well, what about all these, the feedback I get from all the haters? I got all these haters. The haters come at me with their critique. Should I care about that?
Meh. I don't have anything specifically related to the article, but the best advice someone ever gave me was, if someone's giving you feedback, look at their life and say, do I want their life? Mm. And if you do, maybe listen. And if you don't, chuck it in the bucket.
Got it.
That's my thought, but what do you think?
I think that haters, they might have something good to say. However, I think I try to take the biggest critique and the biggest like valid critique from people that know me best. People that know my character and people that I've kind of allowed to speak into my life. Like if some rando is like, you smell bad or your podcast sucks. It's a little different than a good friend of mine who I trust their judgment and their taste being like, hey, you could do this better. But I think that in itself is a self-aware action.
By the way, I didn't mention where this article is from, did I?
No.
So the article's called This is How to Increase Emotional Intelligence, 5 Powerful Secrets. Mm. And I actually found it on a website. I ended up going through 10 or 15 different articles, and most of them just had one-liner tips that didn't have any specific action that I thought could be helpful.
Yeah.
So I read through those, and I tried to start summarizing them, and I thought it was so vague, but this one had a really good summary. But it's from a website called BacaDeSuyo.com. I'm probably saying that incorrectly, but it had really wonderful summaries and it had a lot of citations. So it summarizes the Wall Street Journal. It has summaries of everything.
Cool.
It was pretty well done. It's got a lot of, anyway, so that's where that's from.
Okay.
So the second trait of emotional intelligence is self-management or self-regulation, mm-hmm. and that's the ability to control your emotions and impulses or adapt to changing circumstances.
Okay. So like you're things don't go as you expected, you may be late for some reason, run low in traffic, and just sort of being able to handle that.
Yes.
Okay.
So one way that you can get better at that if you struggle from it is, you're going to like this one, I think, you can start practicing mindfulness.
Oh, yes. I try that often.
Yes.
I sometimes get upset when I'm late or lose something, and especially when I have to get there by car and I know that I have a certain window of time to do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. I've learned to be mindful and to treat the act of driving a car as a meditation of itself, mm-hmm. which is interesting. So it's like, how is the car feeling? Like, what is the energy I'm putting off? Like, am I clenching the wheel? Like, just being mindful of every aspect of driving has helped me become a much better driver when I remember to be mindful. So, yeah, I would say that's a yes.
So there's definitely books on mindfulness, apps. If you want to do that, you can. But if there's one simple practice that you want to start, mm-hmm. one thing that this article mentioned you could do is self-management or regulation, not controlling your emotions, usually happens because you feel a large surge of emotion.
Yeah.
There's a stimulus like traffic, someone's yelling at you, you get a bad email, your kid is being crazy, any one of those. Mm-hmm. And then you feel this sudden pulse mm-hmm. of emotion.
Yeah.
And your self-regulation or self-management could use work if the first thing you do is act out on that emotion. Mm-hmm. So flipping someone off in traffic, yelling, screaming at your kid.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So that's a way to know. But a way to be mindful in that situation. The next time you're feeling that large emotional surge, instead of focusing on the surge, take 10 to 20 seconds and breathe. And for those 10 to 20 seconds, focus on your breathing.
That's really good.
All you need to do.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the third part of being emotional emotional. Oh my goodness.
Emotional intelligent. Emotional. Is that you? Were you on Bachelor in Paradise?
Hello. We met on Bit. So self-motivation is the third part of being emotionally intelligent. Mm-hmm. Self-motivation is a strong internal drive to achieve, align with organizational goals, and maintain optimism in spite of setbacks.
Yes.
So the difference of being self-motivated versus other things is you're externally motivated if it's something outside of your own body mm-hmm. motivating you. One big example is a salary or a bonus. Mm-hmm. So if you're working for that, there's an external thing motivating you.
Okay.
Or if you give your kids candy for behavior.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's not an intrinsic thing. They're doing something good because they're going to get M&Ms.
Okay.
And so they say the best thing to do to feel self-motivated, mm-hmm. and I really like this, is the thing that motivates people the most is finding meaning in anything that they do.
Oh, that's really nice.
So meaningful work is the best way to become more self-motivated. And so if you are feeling not very self-motivated, one of the things they said that you could do that I like is if you're at a job mm-hmm. that you are struggling with, or if you work inside the home and you feel like you don't feel a lot of passion for what you're doing, mm-hmm. they said to make a list of everything you do in the Ooh. Day. And then after you do it, cross it off.
Yeah. I've been doing that too. Just the act of doing that is very fulfilling.
Yeah. And it helps you feel like, wow, I'm doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it helps you slowly start tying meaning to that.
Yeah. I have a little thing that I do at work is where I have a good job, but with all jobs, there's things that you don't really care about that you have to do. And there's things that you really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I try to keep the things that I enjoy like later in the day. That's sort of like my reward. You know, I get all the stuff done. I try not to be, you know, lazy on the boring stuff. Stuff that has to get done. But I do it, and then I get to reward myself with the cool, fun things that I really, really like.
Yeah. I think that's good.
Cool. I didn't know I was doing this emotional intelligence thing, but look at that.
Emotional intelligence. The fourth skill is empathy. Hmm. And empathy is the ability to understand the emotional makeup of other people, and it's a skill in treating people according to their emotional reactions.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty straightforward.
I feel like along with emotional intelligence, empathy is really popular.
There's a lot of stuff about empathy. And it's yeah. different than sympathy.
Yeah.
Because the sympathy is...
not empathy.
I'm sorry for you. Yeah. And not like, I'm sorry with you.
So the hardest part about empathy in context of emotional intelligence is finding the right balance between being too empathetic and mm-hmm. overdoing it mm-hmm. and being that person mm-hmm. or having too little empathy and coming across like you don't care.
Okay.
So the article went on to define three types of empathy. Mm-hmm. And so there's emotional empathy, cognitive empathy, and compassion. And emotional empathy is saying you feel awful, then I feel awful too.
Okay.
Taking someone's emotion and echoing it back. Mm-hmm. Cognitive empathy is processing it in your brain. I think this is probably the one that I do the most. Oh, goodness. Okay. So I understand that you're feeling awful. That must suck.
Yeah. Okay.
Then compassion is you feel awful. I feel for you. How can I help?
Okay.
So being empathetic is knowing in a situation which one of those types of empathy you should tap into and use.
That is tricky because it causes you to be on your toes all the time.
So a way that you can do that.
Whoa, okay.
This was very extensive and I didn't know that it was a thing, but I think it's worth trying out.
Okay.
You're going to like it, I think.
Okay.
So there's, if you want to look into this too, you can Google loving kindness meditation.
Whoa, that sounds like something I've heard of.
And so I kind of cut and paste one of the steps exactly because there was no way I could give it brevity because it was really well done. So the first step is to, first of all, you probably want to be in a quiet space or something, a place where you can close your eyes. And so close your eyes and picture in your mind visually sending people good vibes, good energy, prayer, whatever you believe in.
That's kind of cool.
So that's step one. Then the second part is to repeat the following phrases. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you live with ease.
I feel that if that was sort of your go-to everyday sort of habit, like, it would be really hard to not be empathetic.
Step three.
Okay.
This is the first two I think I hear about. The third, it brings it to another level that I like. After you've sent the phrases to yourself, so first send them to yourself, move on to a benefactor, a close friend, a neutral person, a difficult person, and everyone.
Ooh.
So a benefactor is a teacher, a mentor, or a relative, maybe your boss. A close friend, it could be your best friend, a pet, someone that you talk to frequently. A neutral person, so someone you see frequently but don't ever really notice.
They're just kind of
some person you pass in the hallway. Yeah. A difficult person.
We know those.
We don't feel like we have to define that. And then finally, everyone.
Okay. I really like that.
I
think, so one thing that I've tried to do is if I'm thinking and someone's like aggravating me and I'm kind of dwelling on that aggravation, I'm like, I will like pray for them in like a positive way, not like. Yeah. Not like curses or anything, but like sending them good vibes, good energy, good prayers, like, hey, you know, I hope that they have a good day even. And like, that's really, really, really hard to do. But I feel like this method of just sort of covering everyone like that, that's really cool. That's really taking everything, like you said, to the next level.
I like it too. And I think the one that helps you probably become more empathetic is the difficult person.
Yeah.
Or I feel like you could also, I would almost add one to this because I feel like it's the one group that I'd add that it's the least empathetic would be like, I don't know what the term would be, but the group that you're ignorant on in a way, but I don't mean.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how about you pray for Muslims or send good energy to Muslims because you don't know about
the people not in your lane.
Or someone that's an immigrant or someone that's in a people group that you're not familiar with. Because I feel like when you don't know about those things, and I don't know a lot about a lot of different groups. If you're thinking of them, you become cognizant of them as people. So I think that could be helpful too.
Yeah, this is the loving kindness and Stephanie method. I like that.
Oh, you missed a people group. So there's that. And then the last one is going to be, is social skills.
That's important for emotional intelligence. Going around saying you have emotional intelligence is probably low on the social skills scale.
Funny you say that. So social skills means the ability to build rapport and manage relationships with a goal in mind. And people that are socially skilled tend to have a wide circle of acquaintances, and they have a knack for finding common ground with everyone.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so saying I have emotional intelligence is not the way of doing that.
I'm more emotionally intelligent than you.
Not good. Not good? Not
Might good. Be true. Don't say it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so the irony here, if this is a skill that you lack, social skill is the culmination of all of the other dimensions of emotional intelligence working together.
Okay.
So if this is the skill that you want to get to, you're going to have to go back and do the other four first. Because if you're struggling with this one, there's probably a gap in one of those four.
Yeah, this is like the golden goose that you can't have this without the other.
So if you are practicing.
Because if you try, then that's just manipulation.
Yeah.
If you're just going for that social skill without the investment
mm-hmm.
of empathy and, you know, self-awareness, it's manipulating people. Mm. And that's bad.
Or I think you're right about that. I would also add, or you don't have any people that are socially talking to you because you're struggling in one of these other areas.
Okay.
You aren't being empathetic. You're not reaching out. You're not trying. It could be anything, but so.
That's really good.
This is good. Thought this was really cool because I liked the article. I loved because it was one of the first ones that gave really practical. And it's easy stuff to do. Yeah. None of this stuff would take more than 3 minutes a day.
It's easy, but powerful. Like, how hard is it? You're just like, you know, walking from your car to your office or whatever, and you're just like, I'm going to send good vibes to these 5 people.
Well, and the one I think that I want to work on the most that I could do is the self-management one and breathing more. And I do that at work really well. Like, I have some difficult people that I'm dealing with, and when that happens, I'm able to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes outside of work, I struggle with that. So I think I'm going to try to do that more frequently and stop and breathe for a few seconds.
That's a very emotionally intelligent thing for you to say.
Thank you. I'm so self-aware. Did you know I'm emotionally intelligent?
I think I do all of these. But
You're pretty emotionally intelligent.
But I could do them all better.
Yeah, I'd like so to get better.
I would like to work on all of them more, and I think the loving kindness stuff. I really like that.
I like that too.
So I'd like to try to. It's like, yeah, you can be good. I'm like, yeah, I'm fairly emotionally intelligent. I think I've been told.
Maybe not.
I've been told. I have gotten an award for being emotionally intelligent.
Did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Are you self-deprecating?
I am. You got it. But I want to get better because I feel like this is super important. Like, community and people are important, and that you've got to do this. You have to do this, or else you're just a manipulative jerk.
Or you have no friends. There's only one or the other.
That's it.
We could all get better.
We could all get better. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for this 2-part series on emotional intelligence. I learned a lot, and I think I can grow, and that means A+.
The only other thing I have, Delbert, is we hope that after listening to this podcast, you learn that you can like each other
very, very, very much.